You're listening to another ambitious EntrepreneurNetwork.com podcast, the voice for entrepreneurs and small business. Now, onto the show.
This is Women in Leadership Podcast, featuring success insights from women around the globe. Now, over to your host, Anne-Marie Cross.
Welcome to another episode of Women in Leadership Podcast. This is episode 86, and I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross, the podcasting queen. Now, do you ever get to a stage where you start getting anxious or maybe even experience panic attacks? Well, today's guest certainly has been there, and today she's going to share different techniques and tools on how she better manages so that you can too, any anxiety and panic attacks. Joining me on today's show is Sandy Colombo. Sandy is a leadership coach around mindset. She's an NLP master and trainer. She's an author of two books, A Survivor of Panic Attacks and Anxiety. She's also a communication specialist and business builder. She's been married for over 28 years with two teenage boys, and she's looking forward to the next stage of her life. Now, specifically on today's show, Sandy's going to share for us how to better manage those panic attacks and anxiety. She's also going to talk about how to find your tribe, as well as how to get what you want and what you do want rather than get what you don't want, and so much more. Welcome to the show, Sandy.
Oh, thank you, Anne-Marie. I'm really excited about being here.
Oh, yes. I love the topic you're talking about today, because I was unaware that it was Mental Awareness Week till I interviewed a guest just a couple of days ago, and she's from the US, and mentioned it's such an important topic, particularly when we think about the demanding schedules, things that are just going on in the world, and where there's a lot of anxiety and pressure and stress going on. So I'm sure everything you share today is certainly going to be helpful. Take us back to what you were experiencing, and then let's walk through some of the things that you learned so that people listening and watching today can really start to benefit from some of the insights and things that you do to now better manage panic and obviously anxiety.
Well, I'd firstly like to say that I'm a survivor of panic attacks and anxiety, so I don't get anxiety or panic attacks anymore. But yes, if we go back to 2003, when I had two little boys, I think they were about 2 and 5 at the time, and I was running a business, a wholesale travel business. My husband was also running his own business, so life was really, really busy. And if I look at my strategies even before that time, I was a total people pleaser. Right. And I think with the birth of my second son and going back to full-time work, I just couldn't keep all the balls in the air anymore. And I didn't know what anxiety was. I had no idea what panic attacks were. And I just happened to say one day to a friend, you know, if this is life, wow, you know, it's just, I'm sort of over it.
Yes.
And he picked up on that really quickly and said, wow, what? What did you say to me? And it started a conversation around, you know, if only I had longer than 24 hours in a day, if only I didn't need to sleep, you know, I'd have enough time to do all the things that I need to do. And this dialogue opened up between him and I around, you know, yes, but, you know, you're doing everything for everybody else and nothing for you. And I totally was complete people pleaser.
That's interesting that, you know, you weren't really able to see that it was a panic attack and anxiety. So for someone who may be listening and watching today, or even the recording, that is having the same experiences as you and doesn't actually realize that, hang on, this is what's going on, what are some of the symptoms? What was happening?
Okay, so I call it busy head or full head. It's sort of like if you think of turning on your computer and having all the programs going and then everything freezes.
Yes.
I could hear people talking. Sometimes I couldn't hear actually what they were saying. I was consistently in the future about what might happen, or in the past about what did happen. Lots of self-talk, lots of very negative self-talk. You know, just really just feeling like, actually, if I think about my eyesight was very tunneled vision. And I mean, literally, I couldn't really see. Things were dim. So there were lots of key indicators, but I didn't know, again, I just didn't know what anxiety was or panic attacks. And I was starting to do things like wanting to go to bed really early, waking really early, not sleeping well, probably having more to drink than was, you know, I normally would have. You know, it was nothing to polish off a bottle of wine with dinner. You know, that's probably what got me through all those early years with the kids. But, you know, I like a glass of wine, but I was never, ever a big drinker. And that was sort of around self-soothing.
Yes.
You know, sort of giving myself back a little bit of, and just not allowing anything good to happen for me. I just put myself completely on the back burner.
Yes.
In fact, my sister came around one day and she said, "Did you brush your hair today?" And I went, "No." And there were a number of days where I just didn't brush my hair. There were days where I just didn't have time to have a shower. I mean, basic things that, you know, I always did, but because of the kids and working such long hours, I was just, you know, sliding my stuff to the background.
Yes. And so would that be, as you say, more of the anxiety that was kind of causing those things that you just described to occur? Then if you think of panic attacks, is that kind of something happens and then all of a sudden you have a reaction? Is that, were there different experiences for the panic attacks?
Yes. So panic attacks came along a little bit further along, and it was around food. So my father had grown up during the war. His siblings had been quite ill. One had died from food poisoning. My anxiety and panic attacks actually came from my father. I never knew any of this, of course. I always had to have a full pantry of food, but that was the, that was something I'd inherited from my father's behaviour. And it was around the kids both ended up in hospital before they were 12 months old with gastro-related illnesses. So I think it was a combination of all of these things, and I had taught, because I was a trainer back in those days, food handling,
So
food handling as well with, you know, all the things that could go wrong. So I'm constantly talking about going into, you know, with students about, you know, if you don't handle food right, this can, you know, make you sick. And I think it was a combination of all of those things. And I was thinking, when I woke up in the morning, say at 7, within 1 hour I counted how many times I had that idea had popped into my head about being sick. And that was, that was, if you chunk down, that was the actual key thing about me getting sick or the kids being sick.
Yes.
And it was something like 5,000 times in that first hour.
Wow.
Like, it was incredible.
Yeah.
So my brain was on default. It just kept going, oh, my God, the kids are in the bathroom. They must be sick. Oh, my God. Kids at this, blah, blah, blah. Or I've just eaten that. Is that going to make me sick? And I got to a point I didn't even want to eat out at a restaurant.
Yes. And so, you know, it's interesting that all of this was going on automatically. It was running. It was like, a, you know, like this script, if you will, in the background that you did not even know what was going on. And it triggered you with things that were going on, with all of these thoughts and stuff. I imagine that you get to a stage where you just want to turn your brain off, that you just want to stop thinking.
And you can't.
Yeah.
And that, or you feel you can't, because you actually can.
Yeah.
And you realise that I had created all of this.
Yes.
So anxiety and panic attacks, they're a fear of fear itself. So I was already, we were already at the hospital if the kids were in the bathroom longer than 1 minute, because I thought that they'd have gastro or they were sick or there was something wrong, you know. So, you know, you create it yourself. It's your own worst nightmare.
Yeah.
So it's a thing that you can think of that would be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
And then you replay it. You set it and it replays automatically. You're quite right in your brain.
Wow.
And it's a pattern of thinking. And that is all it is.
Yes.
And yet if someone had said that to me when I was in the middle of all of this going on, I think I might have hit them.
Yes, and said, no. Look, thank you for sharing that, because, you know, I think sometimes, not sometimes, it's so important to have these open discussions and conversations, because someone, as I said, may be experiencing this. And number one, when we're going through this, any situation, we often will think that we're the only people that are going through this, that no one really understands us, and there's no one can really help us. And it's not till we hear or see or someone's experienced the same thing that we think, oh, and someone who's gone through that and is a survivor, that we can say, wow, if something can happen for her, that she now can say that she's a survivor and she doesn't replay all these things in her mind and drive herself to the point of just, you know, maybe there's something for me as well. So was it the conversation that you had with your colleague or your friend then that opened up the opportunity for you to start learning, hang on a minute, maybe there's some support out there or something that I can do differently? Was it through him?
Yes, I think so. I think what it is we all have a blind spot. And while I knew probably that things weren't really progressing the way I wanted them to go, one of the things that's always made me really successful in business is the fact that I'm really resilient, so I just push through. Mm-hmm. And when I look at people who are probably around me who've had anxiety or panic attacks or both, that's a key indicator. You're successful, right? And you just push through.
Yes.
And you stop listening to you. And so the point was, I kept pushing through, but there was no end to the pushing through, because, you know, the kids are teenagers now, it's a little bit different. But, you know, you can't push through for 10 years.
No.
Right? So you can – it's like a J curve in business. You can do the curve. Mm-hmm. That's okay. But if you're doing the J curve for 2, 3, 4 years, mm-hmm. you're going to have burnout. And that's what it starts as, burnout.
Yes.
It then flips to anxiety or panic attacks or either. And, yes, this person said to me, this is not okay. And he knew me very well. And he said, this is not okay. You need to do something about this. And that was my feedback to say. And my husband still to this day says, when we talk about it now, he says, I just had no idea how deep that all was going on for you. Mm-hmm. You just kept it all together. And I still kept all the balls in the air, Anne-Marie, which is, you know, just – exactly my personality,
yes.
right, to do that while I'm falling apart.
Yeah. And you know what? I think so many people can relate to that. We just deal with it. You know, pick yourself up, get over it. You've got so many sayings, especially here in Australia, you know, she'll be right, mate, or whatever. But you know what? There comes a time. It's like a rubber band that you're stretching or twisting and twisting. There comes a point in time that is going to snap. So thank goodness you had that colleague that recognised that in you, to give you that feedback, to hold that mirror up, if you will, to say, you know what, if you continue on like that, it's just not okay. You can't keep managing. So what did you do? Guide us through that.
So the first thing I did was I went to see the doctor and said, look, this is what my colleague said to me. What do you think? First thing the doctor said, and I passed no judgment on this, was, I'll put you on medication. And I actually said no. No, I don't want to go on medication. And again, I say no judgment around this. What I do see around being medicated is that I needed to understand what it was first. And then I said to her, I'll come back in a week and I'll see how I'm feeling. And then I just went and found out about anxiety. And one of the books that the doctor actually said to me to get was a book called Living With It, which is a cartoon-based book. Because I'm thinking at this point, I don't have time to read a book. Are you kidding me? I've hardly got time to go to the doctors, right? And this is a cartoon-type book. And I sat there and I took some time and I read it. And I sat there and I cried for probably about 30 minutes going, my goodness, this is me. This is what's been happening to me and I didn't even realize.
Yes. Wow. Awareness is sometimes the best thing, isn't it? Because then you can make different choices. And absolutely, I love the way you said there's absolutely no judgment, because sometimes with that, there's a hormone imbalance. There's actually a physical thing that's going on that's triggering different hormones that, I guess, so you definitely want to get all of that sorted out if someone's experiencing that. So what happened then? You read this book, you really could see that, goodness, this laid out my journey, my life. What was the next step for you?
For me, I've always been a very you know, the glasses half full type mm-hmm. of girl, right? And that's what had got me to this point anyway, because it'll be okay, exactly what you're saying. Mm. That was, you know, it'll be all right. I'll just, you know, do all of these things. And so I thought to myself, well, I got myself here. I don't know much about it, but I got myself here. I've got to be able to get myself back. Mm. And I would say that to anybody who's in any stage of anxiety, or panic attacks or stress or whatever. You have created this world, mm. right, that you're in at the moment, and you can undo it.
Yes.
So that's a really good news. Mm. Now, I'm going to also say to you that it probably wasn't just the last week that you got yourself here. And if I was perfectly honest, my people-pleasing behavior started when I was a little girl, with my father and the dynamics in our home. And my people-pleasing ways as a child got me what I needed as a child. Mm-hmm. So I used them to influence the people around me. I just was overusing my people-pleasing. Mm-hmm. When I had other people depending on me,
yes,
i.e. the kids, right? They need their mum. So it was putting all of that into priority. And the other thing is, rather than it, because it did feel very overwhelming at that point, is chunk it down. How do you eat an elephant? One spoonful at a time. So I thought to myself, right, I'm just going to do one thing towards feeling better, getting better, mm-hmm. and dealing with this. And that day was one thing, was just spending half an hour reading that book. Mm. So tomorrow I'm going to do the next step. And it was really chunking it down and promising myself to do those things for me.
Yes.
Which is why I ended up with the anxiety and panic attacks. It was actually wanting to teach me to look after me better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So it's an odd thing that it's actually a good thing, because it's actually teaching you something.
Yes.
But at the time when you're in it, it doesn't feel very good.
No, no. And I guess also too, sometimes the lessons we can learn, the helpfulness is on the other side. If we continue to do what you were doing, sure, it might be doing a lesson, but you hadn't actually gotten the lesson, which was, hey, you need to stop trying to be all things to all people. You need to stop looking at everything at this big, huge thing, but rather, as you say, chunk it down, narrow it down to certain things, and not be all things to all people. Let's talk about that, because finding your own tribe, and I think everything that we mentioned in the introduction and how to get what you do want and not what you don't want, it can really incorporate what you're talking about today and helping you to ease those panic attacks and ease the anxiety. Finding your tribe, talk a little bit more about that, because there could be some people in your tribe or in your community or in your sphere now that really are not best supporting you, and you need to go and find other communities as you're supporting yourself, and then obviously continuing life. You know, you've got some people that just drain you because they're stuck in their own stuff. How did this play out for you?
So this is the thing with people pleasers, and I do a lot of this work in my leadership work as well. The thing is with people pleasers, you would think, or I would anyway, that you would attract other people pleasers, right?
Mm-hmm.
But no, what people pleasers attract are the people takers. Mm-hmm. Or the people who, what I would call maybe win-lose people, not win-win people. People pleasers, to me, all they want is everybody to be happy.
Yes.
And so what happens is you attract those people who aren't particularly often happy. Mm. So they're happy to jump on you because you're happy to sit there and listen and help.
Yes.
Right? Or they're happy to give you extra tasks to do, because people pleasers are often, in my experience anyway, and definitely for me, you know, I was very good at ticking off that to-do list.
Mm.
And so people were really good at just saying, well, Sandy can do it. Yeah. She's busy. She's really good at what she does. She'll do it.
Yeah.
And so I ended up with a lot of people around me, and it's not to say that they weren't good people. I had trained them to treat me in that way.
Yeah.
A lot of people around me who were actually sort of pushing stuff towards me, and because I wasn't saying no, they didn't think it was a problem.
Yes.
But it was a massive problem for me, right?
Yeah, yeah. Something that you said, Sandy, I want to repeat this because it's going to be a lesson for someone, and again, only for if people are open to it. when we're often complaining about how people are treating us, what you said is so true. We train people on how they treat us. So if someone is treating you badly, there's a reason because of that, and that is because you've allowed them in one way or another, saying no, not whatever it might be. So important, isn't it? We do treat people or train people through our actions, sometimes our inactions, through what we say and sometimes what we don't say. We allow them in one way or another to impact us, to treat us. Yeah. Speak a bit more about this. This would have been a huge aha for you, yes?
Yes, and taking responsibility too, because there's a part of me had started going poor me around around all the things that, but I was actually creating it, right?
Yes.
I was creating my boss just throwing more work at me by completing it really quickly, and I was creating, you know, my mother-in-law to get, you know, to get me to do things because I always looked so accomplished, and I always like to project a bit of a perfectionist thing around how I looked, how I acted, how I was in my professional life. And interesting, Anne-Marie, today, because I didn't know I was going to be on camera and I've got no makeup on.
And you look beautiful, by the way.
Say, do you want to go and run and put some makeup on? Because the kids are sick today. So, you know, do you want to get dressed? And I went, you know what? I would like to, but
good on
no.
you. Yeah.
That's okay because you know what? Stuff happens.
Yeah.
You know, the kids are sick and I'm in my trackie and you know what? Other women out there will go, well, that's okay. She's really brave. She went on there on camera without, you know, having her makeup on. And and that's the thing, that whole showing that perfection, I've got all the balls in the air and I'm good, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
People are like, wow. You know, then she can take on more.
Yes.
Not, isn't she doing a good job? Which is what I wanted them to be thinking.
It's so important, I think, for people who do want to please others and be, you know, supportive and everything, to put up some clear boundaries. I'll share something really brief. I remember when I was first in the workplace, I would have been about 19. We were a small company. And in fact, when I say small, we were probably less than 10 people. So we all had various jobs to do. We had a new manager, a sales manager that came from a large company into our business. And the first day that he was there, he said, oh, could you ring so-and-so for me? And I looked up from my desk and I said, why, is your dialing finger on strike? No, I'm, you know, I didn't say, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. But that's how I kind of put my boundaries up. No, I'm not going to run around and ring for you. But that's what you need to do, isn't it? You need to put boundaries up and be able to have that conversation so that person knows. And he just said, oh, am I allowed to make my own phone calls? In that company that he came from, no one was allowed to make their own phone calls. Everything needed to be done through a receptionist and clocked, you know, and documented. And sometimes
Absolutely.
It's having a conversation.
And it's having your own rule book.
Yeah.
And I work a lot with my clients over this. Having your own rule book about what is a no to someone else is an absolute yes to you. And it's not when you say no, when you start, I'll use me as an example, but when I first started saying no, I would feel so bad because I'd said no, Anne-Marie. And then I'd go into justification.
Yes.
I can't do it because of blah, 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 right? And you're like, all you needed to say was no.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
I'll ask Sue over here, you know.
Yeah.
Right? So it's learning to be able to say no without the justification.
Mm.
I then went into another level of women can be really tough on other women. And I'll share just a really quick story with you. I remember my oldest son was in grade 6 and I had a part body stage. So I was well past all the anxiety and panic attacks and those sorts of things. But I'd said no in a situation that I couldn't actually do a plate of sandwiches. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, people out from the US coming to meet me every day in the office. The office was in Essendon. I couldn't do a plate of sandwiches and drop them off at 9 o'clock. It just wasn't going to work. And so I said, look, no, I can't do that. And this other woman turned round, who, you know, I was quite good friends with, and said, oh, for God's sake, Sandy, of course you can. And I thought to myself, I was absolutely speechless to begin with. And I went, how would you know what I have on and what I don't. Now, this other woman didn't work and was a stay-at-home mum, right? And I was really lucky in the job that I did have that I was very flexible to be able to do things. But this week I knew I couldn't. And that took me about a week to get over. Yeah. And I remember thinking, why am I feeling so bad about that? And why wasn't I clearer with her? Why didn't I pull her aside and say, you know, that's okay for you, but it's not actually okay for me. So why would you do that to another woman? Why wouldn't you support me?
Yes.
And to this day, I still remember that conversation.
Yes.
And I think other women often jump in and use their own what's going on for them, for others, where they don't actually know what's going on in somebody else's world.
Yeah.
A little bit like your story with, you know, the guy ringing. He wasn't
aware that that was the case. Yeah. And look, I think what you said there is just so, such an important insight, is that we can, and look, there's some people who really don't care, and like them, you want to get them out of your circle because, and not even worry about that, because that's one of the things that we do, don't we? We almost start to worry and have conversations in our heads about what happens with this, and then the whole guilt thing. We need to just put a stop on that and be able to just be, as you said, be fine with that.
And I think it's using a tool like asking why.
Yes.
A little bit like what you just said. So, Sandy, why can't you make those sandwiches? What's going on for you, right? And I would have explained to her, and not just quickly passing judgment, oh, yes, you can. You know, just go and do it sort of thing.
Yeah.
So asking the person what's going on in their world and why.
Yeah, you know? I mean,
I've been curious, you know.
I think that's so good, because probably the sarcastic person in me, and I can be, like, if someone pushes the wrong buttons, it'll either be humour or it will. You could have quite honestly turned around and turned that right back on her and said, well, you might have nothing else to do because you're home all day. I'm actually working. You know what I mean? But sometimes in that moment,
and that is
to
exactly what happens
you.
When you have a group of women together, Anne Marie, and then it's a bite back rather than a communication.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, you know, communicate with other people and ask, Sandy, why couldn't you do those sandwiches?
You know,
what's going on there for you? Do you need help?
Yes.
Rather than biting back at me and telling me that I can do it, when I clearly have said that I can't.
I think that's a huge lesson for all of us, is to really keep our mouths closed unless we're saying something that's going to be helpful or empowering. Don't judge others on what's going on for them with what's going on for us. And I see that in communities, you know, if someone is, you know, with children even, there's all this debate on what should be done, what shouldn't be done, all of this kind of stuff. What's right for someone may not necessarily be right for you, and vice versa.
Absolutely.
And I think we need to really keep our own perceptions and that to ourselves, unless someone asks for that, or inquire, make an inquiry. Is there something I can help you with? Oh, okay, no worries, because they would have known that you would have jumped in anyway. So I'm sure it would not have been something that
I think that's
said.
Why I was so outraged by this situation. For me to remember this, you know, 10 years on, was because I was one of those people who, I was one of those 10% in the school community that really put in, and so did my husband.
Yes.
Even though we both work full time. And so it was like, sometimes I can put in and sometimes I can't. I'm just like that rubber band thing, right?
Yeah.
And I've got to be comfortable to be able to say that. And other people have to be able to listen.
Yeah. You know what?
And take a full aspect of who Sandy Colombo is.
Yes.
You know, not just, I can't make the sandwiches.
Yeah. And you know what? As you were saying that, I bet you in her mind, and it may have come out the wrong way, she's probably seen you as someone who is contributing 110%. Mm. So she's probably thinking, oh, you can do that for sure, Sandy. Not
That's
even
exactly
thinking.
Right.
And had you inquired back of her and she'd realized what was going on for you, she might have said, oh, look, I didn't mean it that way either. Because sometimes we can carry on these conversations and debates and have whole arguments, and I'll stand there thinking to myself, do you realize you just spent 5 minutes having an argument with someone, and when I've met them, it's like, how are you, your kind of thing. We can, if we don't.
So you asked me before, Anne-Marie, what was the start of that?
Yeah.
Like, so if I had to pinpoint it, it was not a situation like that and playing it over and over and over again in my head.
Yes.
Until that thing, that one thing, like that situation back in 2003, would have been in my head for weeks.
Yes.
And all of the things I could have said and all the things I wanted to say and all the things I didn't say and why didn't I say them and blah, 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 blah. Mm. And this, and that's what it was like in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
And not just one thing, lots of different
ways. Yeah, lots of different ways. And it's like that, isn't it? Because right there at the moment you don't think of something. It's like when half an hour later or whatever you think, oh, I had a good punchline or I had a good comeback for that. And be interesting if she ever stumbles across this podcast.
Well, interesting. She's still a friend of mine, in fact.
And
that's the other interesting thing, because just because these you're allowing people to treat you like that doesn't mean that they're not your friends.
Mm.
It's just you've allowed it.
Yes.
You just haven't set your own boundaries around what's okay and what's not. And with this particular person, I know that what I know now, not at the time probably, but what I know now is that she's harder on herself than she is on anybody else.
Yeah.
And that's why she was saying what she was saying to me.
Yeah.
And everything we do say to other people is how we're treating ourselves. So
yes.
When we are really judgmental, when we do put people down, when we do bite back in an unkind way sometimes, mm. That's what we're saying to ourselves.
It's a reflection of what's going on for us, isn't
it? For us.
It?
It's not anything to do with the other person.
That is such another great insight that you're sharing there, Sandy, because so often we feel that, as you said before, that the world is against us through people's reactions or inactions, all of that kind of stuff. But really often it has nothing to do with us or that circumstance or that situation. It is a huge indication of what's going on in their life and what really is happening for them. And I think once we start to recognize that and maybe even start to look at situations from the other person's point of view, as soon as I almost imagine myself in someone else's shoes, I might not agree with it, but I can understand how they got to that decision or why they acted that way. And from there, you can start to build a pathway to...
Absolutely. Mm. And women are generally far more judgmental than men.
Mm.
You know, and I watch groups of men, and one man says, oh, buddy, can't do that. And they go, no problem.
Yeah.
Women actually often don't.
Yes.
And it's because we're juggling all these balls in the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like we've got to prove to everybody else how many balls we're juggling, that we're better than you with your juggling. And you know what I mean? Like it's sometimes it's okay to be human. It's okay to show your friends that you're vulnerable. It's okay to say, look, you know, I had panic attacks in 2003 and I had anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say to me, you're so brave talking about that. And I go, I don't feel I'm brave talking about it at all. If I can help one person, you know, not go as far down the track as what I did, right? Or even, you know, find their way back, then, you know, I'm really pleased about that, because I actually – without my panic attacks and without the anxiety, I wouldn't be doing the job I'm doing today.
Mm.
It's actually led me into becoming a practitioner of NLP.
Yes.
And then I did my master and then I did train the trainers. I work with every client I have has some form of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the way we're living today on iPhones and, you know, smart devices.
Mm-hmm.
We're not turning off. We're not meditating or we're not taking some time out to walk or put ourselves first. We've got to make, you know, all the, you know, our Facebook world look perfect and everything look perfect.
Yes.
And really,
yeah.
I mean,
no.
Who's what this all
I
for?
Mean, that whole perfection and all of that, when you look behind the scenes of anyone, everyone, we've all got our own struggles. It's just different for each and every one of us. And I think the important thing is having that discussion and going, you know what, it will be okay. There is different ways to handle things and you're certainly not alone. Let's talk about how to get what you do want rather than getting what you don't want, because I know that there's some, you know, incredible tools and things that through NLP and that just even in what you say to yourself, your inner voice and some of the language, the communications that you use that can disempower you and you don't even know that you're doing it.
May I pick one of yours, Anne-Marie? Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Right. You've told me that you've tried to do lots of things during this interview. We've talked about you've tried to do this or you've tried to do that. Try is a word that I take out of my vocab unless I say tried.
Yes.
Right? Because it's something that says that, for example, if I said to you, try and pick up that pen.
Mm-hmm.
you can't do that.
Yeah, because you're in the process of always trying. It's never completed.
Yes. And there is a list of words that you reframe what you're thinking and speaking. Your words are so important. Although they're only 7% of your communication, they're a big part of how you're communicating with yourself.
Yes.
So when I think about when my father was very ill and I needed to go every day to the hospital, if I framed it as I should go, it felt like a task. If I framed it as I want to go and see my father, it felt more pleasurable.
Yes.
You know, so shoulds and coulds, I would say, if you can remove them or be aware of using them. Because when I start saying I should do that, I'm like, wow, okay, what's that about? You know, and I also think just reframing and realizing that your emotions are flags, right? So every emotion that you have is just a flag of awareness. It's your body telling you what's going on.
Yes.
And I always use this example with my clients that my younger son was in about grade 4 or 5 and he decided he wanted to be an altar boy and went on an overly Catholic family. But here I am driving him to Mass one Sunday morning. You know, it was really quite amusing for me because, you know, I'm really not that Mass-going type of girl. But I'm driving and he's really nervous. And I said to him, so what's happening? And he said, oh, Mum, he said, I'm so nervous. And I said, explain it to me. He said, I've got butterflies. I feel sick. My head's, you know, whizzing round. And I said, right, okay, so that's the same feeling as excitement, isn't it? And he sat there for about, felt like forever, and then he goes, Mum, can't believe it's taken you all this time until I'm 8 for you to tell me that it's the same feeling. Oh, it's much better to be excited. I'll just be excited. I said, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's the same feeling.
Yes.
So what the feeling you're getting often is just a label we're putting on it. I'm feeling stressed or I'm feeling excited or I'm feeling nervous, I'm feeling excited, right? It can be the same feeling. It's just the label that you're calling it.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing is I just realised that this has just been a brilliant show. I'm just so thankful that we connected and get to feature you. And this week where we know that in the US is Mental Awareness Week, and here in Australia we're always, as you know, on all of the different medians encouraging people to be mindful of what's going on for them psychologically. And I know that sometimes, and we spoke about this before, where there was that connection to you as a child and then with your father. And sometimes for some people, there's something that continues to trigger them unconsciously. They're not really aware of it. And it's a lot harder for them to be able to address that and change that. And I know that's certainly an area where you can help them to understand that through the tools that you do with NLP. Explain to people, if you will, how to get in contact with you. What's the best way for them to do that? If they've heard and seen something today that they realize, you know what, I really need to talk to someone about that because I want to make some significant changes so that I can start to say, you know what, I have lived through, I'm no longer, I'm a survivor.
Absolutely. And look, it's not easy when you're in it to be able to. It's a little bit like that saying, you can't see the forest for the trees.
Yes.
Just know it will be okay and that I've come out the other side, you can too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and remember that there isn't a problem that any human has had that some other human hasn't had before.
Yes.
And I think if you can keep those two points in your head, then you can start. And the third one being, you know, it's the little steps.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just a little thing. How do you eat an elephant? One spoonful at a time. You know, we've given you some helpful tips today and how to do it. But of course, you know, reach out to me on social media. I have a big following on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook or my website, which is www.columboconsulting.com.au. And reach out in any way that you want to. And start asking for help, because that was my big thing. I never wanted to ask anybody to help me. And when I did actually say, I'm struggling a bit with all of this, I got help from places I never ever thought I would get help from.
Yes.
And I had assumed I wouldn't get help from.
Yeah.
So never assume anything.
No.
You know, and ask for help, you know, and if those people aren't willing to, that are in your world, aren't willing to help you, then that's probably someone you don't want to spend a lot of time with, because I'm sure you've been helping them a lot. You know, yes. Relationships are two-way streets, aren't mm-hmm. they, Anne-Marie?
Yeah.
It's not all one way.
That's right. If you're not getting anything out of that, get another relationship and find someone who is going to give and take. And, you know, I think a lot of – and I'm glad it is changing. It's not as bad as it was. You know, the stigma around mental health and mental what we're talking about today, and there's absolutely no shame, absolutely no shame in experiencing this, because at one time or another, we all experience this. It's just for some of us, we experience it a little bit more consistently, and we need some of these practical steps to be able to support
absolutely.
Us.
And Anne-Marie, I've got to tell you, I love the fact that I had anxiety and panic attacks. Mm. It has been the best learning for me, because I'm so much happier now than what I was in my, I mean, I'm, you know, very happily married and have two beautiful kids and all those sorts of things. But I mean, personally, myself, it has been a real journey of exploring who I am, because I think sometimes as a wife and mother, we and working as well, you know, there were all these Sandys, but there wasn't that personal Sandy.
Who was Sandy? Who are you? Yeah. That's right. And you probably never even thought of that. What do you mean? I haven't got time for that. And off you are, off, you know.
And having time to find out who that person is and what I'm at, what I actually like, was a big part of the process, because I like work. I've always liked work, so I would tie myself up in work. But you also need to make sure that you have some hobbies and some things just to de-stress and just be who you are, that you're not, you know, someone's mother, someone's wife, someone's, you know, manager or employee or boss or whatever.
The sandwich maker, whatever.
You know? Whatever. You know, I'm now CEO of stocking the fridge. I used to be CEO of doing everything for the kids. Now it's just making sure there's food in the house.
Love it. Look, I've loved the conversation today. We'll put all of the links that you can connect with Sandy over on our show notes as well, ambitiousentrepreneurnetwork.com/WIL86. If you are hearing or listening and watching this today, and you know that there's someone in your life that you would love to hear this message, please share it. Go ahead and share it anyway. I think it's so important to get this message out there, that there is support out there for those people who are struggling with mental health. There's nothing
and
to Anne-Marie, be ashamed
of. And I just forgot to say one thing, which is really important. On my website, there's a whole lot of free tools, which are coaching tools and things like that, that people can join my community. That, you know, you can just drop in there and get some, just some worksheets and things that you can do yourself, because not everybody's always feels comfortable reaching out.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? So that's Columbo Consulting.
Yes, Columbo Consulting.
.com.au.
That's it.
Fantastic. And we'll also put a link on the show notes to that, and also here on Facebook Live too, because we're streaming this live. So you can pop across, get those resources, and benefit from those immediately. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Anne-Marie. I really loved it.
You've been listening to Women in Leadership Podcast, brought to you by BeTheDifferenceMovement.com. Changing the world, one message at a time. Do you feel called to influence real change with your message? Join our supportive community of like-minded influencers, thought leaders, and disruptors at www.BeTheDifferenceMovement.com. That's BeTheDifferenceMovement.com.